chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may dab in the middle of it. Grass may dab in the middle. We are grass may dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. I'm going to start off with an introductory insight on nanotechnology by Greg Reese, and then we're going to follow that with a 30-minute clip that we just had to put up because it's an interview that I was had with Dr. McCullough, Peter McCullough, and it's so insightful and he covers so many very, very important points about not only the virus but the vaccine. But it's something that you can download if you do an opposite click on some browser. You can download and listen to it again. I'm putting it here at the beginning so you won't get discouraged about what we're really about on this first hour. But it's very, very important to listen to this one. But anyway, here we go with Greg Reese with some good insights about nanotechnology.
Scientists have been designing ways to put their so-called vaccines in the food supply. And it seems they may have created an avenue to begin this. Brought to you by the American Chemical Society and four scientists from Communist China, functional hybrid micro-nano entities are being implemented to promote food safety, to detect hazardous substances in agricultural food products. They are putting in experimental hazardous substances. Molecular imprinting polymers integrated with quantum dots installs a surveillance platform into your food and body. Molecular imprinting polymers integrated with upconversion luminescent nanoparticles conducts chemical analysis of your food and body. Upconversion luminescent nanoparticles combined with metal organic frameworks are tunable porous metals that have the power to regulate the dispensing of nutrition to comply with international mandates. Magnetic metal organic frameworks are metal frameworks designed for targeting drug delivery. Magnetic covalent organic frameworks are used for sensing food in the human body. And covalent organic frameworks doped with quantum dots are used for detection of insecticides. If they wanted to regulate healthy food, they would promote organic growing, not inject a cocktail of metallic nanotech into the entire food supply. For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
Coming up next is Alex's interview with Dr. Peter McCullough. And like I said earlier at the beginning of this first hour, listen to this all the way through. And you can repeat it, download it off of my site, but really listen to this because it's very, very important. And it covers many aspects of not only the virus problem, but the problems with the vaccine. And also he has a recovery, protocol and can direct you to a site that people are important for the people that have been vaccinated to work through a recovery type of protocol. So listen to this very carefully.
Dr. Peter McCullough, who is a major research scientist and heart doctor, is with us. And very exciting things are coming up very, very soon with the audiences that this man's going to be speaking to. But he's extremely honored. He told me to be here talking to all of you great people. And he hopes you will research everything he says. He's going to give you citations as well. And then once we're not live, we're going to archive this to band.video, and we will endeavor under it to add some of the links to papers that he's going to be citing so that you can see this for yourself and then warn others, and don't let the system gaslight you and say, oh, that's just made up. You're not a scientist. What do you know? So, look, So you want to get back into microcarditis, you want to get back into a lot of other areas, and but then you were also during the break explaining to me that the virus and the vaccine are basically biologically what they're doing in the body is the same thing, which we now see manifested. But I was also telling you, just as a historian, a lay historian, but as someone that loves history and has also been politically engaged heavily for 28 years, I see big rollouts happening, and I see big corporations and the UN involved, and I see censorship up front. And I witness them saying up front, oh, you'll need lots of boosters, and then the vaccine doesn't work. It hurts the immune system. It causes all these illnesses, and now we know it basically causes what the supposed virus did, and that's the perfect plan. You bring out a vaccine. It's not really a vaccine. Then you know that when you create a, quote, vaccine for that, it's actually going to create this matrix in the body, that this poisonous protein that takes over, that's linked to cancer and heart attacks and everything else. And then all these experts predict it before it even happens, and then the shots begin, and it happens just as bad as the worst predictions, and it's just like otherworldly nightmare. I'm saying this is obviously a premeditated operation. I said that 21 months ago, and now we know it's out of Wuhan. We know Bill Gates is involved. We know the Chi-Coms are involved. I mean, we know the UN is quarterbacking it. We know the UN's calling for world government controls now to handle the COVID crisis. Now they're telling us it's here forever. And the very same groups have told us they want to depopulate us. I know as a scientist, as a doctor, you don't like to speculate. I'm just saying I'm somebody that can add 2 + 2 = 4. And this looks like a total bioweapon, you know, globalist rollout program to me.
It's biologically cohesive, because the spike protein on the ball of the virus is the same protein that's in the human body after vaccination. So whether or not someone's been exposed to it for the respiratory illness, or whether or not someone's taken the vaccine, they now are exposed to the spike protein. What do we know about this? In a paper by Avolio and colleagues, it's clear the spike protein does damage the heart through pericytes. I think it's unequivocal. The U.S. FDA, all the other regulatory bodies have warnings. Pfizer and Moderna cause myocarditis. I think everybody should understand this. Myocarditis is heart injury. I've seen it. I've reported it to the CDC. I've had CDC officers call me and verify it. This syndrome is not mild because it requires hospitalization. By regulatory definition, it's a serious adverse event. It's an SAE. So myocarditis is not mild. I think every parent needs to hear this. The second thing is myocarditis is not rare. It is not rare. We have over 10,000 cases, and we haven't even started vaccinating the young children. I can't imagine how many more cases of heart damage are going to occur. Let me tell you what happens after the kids are hospitalized. They have to be observed. When there's early signs and symptoms of heart failure, we actually have to give heart failure prevention medicines and then monitor them with an never-ending story for the parents. Is the heart going to recover or it's not? And then the children can have no physical activity. They have to be on heart failure medications, a subset of them, and they have to be monitored. And then we ultimately have to get to resolution. When I mean resolution, the blood tests have to clear up, the EKG has to clear up, and the imaging has to return to normal, and we can actually start to wind down these drugs. I can't imagine, we're at 10,000, Alex, I can't imagine getting many tens of thousands of young American and young children worldwide with this problem, all induced by a vaccine that's not clinically indicated and it's not medically necessary. Do you know that the deaths that have occurred in COVID-19 in children is roughly the same number that occur annually with influenza, because there are children at risk. Sadly, there are kids with various congenital conditions, with cystic fibrosis, other pulmonary conditions where they can be overwhelmed by a viral infection.
Comorbidities.
Yeah, but by and large, COVID-19 is very mild, and in the registrational data that the FDA just looked at, two occasions now, age 5 to 11 and age 12 to 17, there are no serious cases in the clinical trials. It's nothing more than a drippy nose in children. The vaccine, we don't vaccinate people to prevent a drippy nose. Linus Pauling said that years ago. Don't vaccinate against the common cold. There's no clinical benefit of vaccinating children. And at this point in time, in a sense, it's just being levered at the children. Dan Ball had data on OAN the other day, survey, 27% of American parents have said they're going to vaccinate their children. I'm telling you, as a doctor, as a concerned doctor, that's 27% too many.
Doctor, I remember back when I was a child, they don't really put it on TV anymore, but on PBS they would show Nazi films of people being marched into pits and shot. They would show black and white footage of the actual death camps. And I would sit there. My parents let me watch it. They wanted me to know history. And I was interested, you know, in that's what I watched as a child. It was not really cartoons. I liked PBS and documentaries and, you know, Shakespearean films. That's the stuff I was into. It was adult content. But now I have the same feelings watching these children be injected, knowing large percentage of them are going to have problems. I showed an NIH article on their site yesterday, and I want you to give me your take on it. And it said that between 26 and 53%, that was 56%, of children that develop moderate microcarditis will end up dying within 3 to 10 years. That was the headline. That was in the article. Now I don't know if the NIH is accurate. They were saying that, and so they're saying, oh, it's no big deal if your child gets microcarditis. Is it true that between 23 and 56% that get microcarditis end up dying?
There are many forms of myocarditis. It's rare. Let me tell you, in my career, I've seen a handful of cases. The worst type is called giant cell myocarditis, which can be fatal within about 6 months. There's parvovirus, adenoviral types of myocarditis. They're rare. This one appears to be, A, it's common, and it's by direct injection. It looks like it's directly active there in the heart. All the data are coming in. Everything we've learned about the vaccines since the release, unfortunately, Alex, is bad. We have one paper after another, one shoe to drop after another, learning about damage to the heart. Tracy Hoag, University of California at Davis, analysis late summer, published it. It's in preprint form. She has used the VAERS and VSAFE data. This is a very high-quality paper. We are in thousands of cases now, 86% still requiring hospitalization. There doesn't appear to be any way of managing myocarditis as an outpatient, 86% requiring hospitalization. What Hoag showed, Alex, is a child ages 12 to 17 is more likely to be hospitalized with myocarditis than taking your chances with COVID and the very rare chance of actually getting hospitalized due to COVID-19 as a child. And that doesn't assume that the child gets any treatment. And we know that we can easily treat COVID-19 in children with azithromycin, budesonide, oral prednisone, limited dose adjusted aspirin. We have ways of managing COVID-19.
And so the $64 trillion question is, why is Biden mandating it now outside of law? They're not just saying, oh, children five and up can have it. Places like San Francisco are saying you will have it, or you can't go to the grocery store, or you can't go to a hamburger place, you can't go to school. I mean, this is like a science fiction dystopic nightmare where they're not just coming at adults with this thing now. They're going after the children. It's like a weird leftist sacrament to do this to the children. And then how the hell are they going to cover up all the deaths and heart attacks? This just seems like they're trying to cause a civil war, doctor.
The FDA makes the determination on the emergency use authorization, and then the CDC makes the implementation recommendations. On two occasions now in September and now in October, the CDC and FDA have heard formal presentations of the Hoag analysis. That's a bad trade-off. More hospitalizations with myocarditis than COVID-19 hospitalizations avoided with the vaccine. And then now the Kostoff analysis, published in Toxicology Reports, Ron Kostoff, multi-author paper, has shown at all age groups, one is more likely to die after the COVID-19 vaccine than taking your chances with COVID-19 and ending up in the hospital.
And they know that. And so why the hell would they be doing this?
The fear, the contagion of fear that one individual would in fact spread the virus to another has basically been this a divisive and now devouring mass psychosis that we're in. There are parents that are truly afraid of their children. They are afraid their children are going to give them COVID-19.
And they're keeping them hostage in the house for years, bragging that until their child gets the injection, they can't go outside. And the media is saying that's good. It's no longer abuse to keep a little girl for 20 months inside like this mother bragged on TikTok. Now it's a good thing to do. Doctor, stay right there. We're going to come back. We got the whole next hour if you can stay and lay it all out. And you're also helped work on the book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. And we are the prey. Dr. Peter R. Brigham, MD, and others help with us together with Dr. Peter A. McCullough, who is in studio with us now. I'm Alex Jones with InfoWars.com and NewsWars.com. Take the live feed and share it, and take the archive for Bandoff video with us and share it and save lives. We'll be right back. Chinese and all the leftists are getting power and control using this virus they cooked up in a lab and they give us a so-called vaccine now that does the exact same thing except worse. Unbelievable. Dr. Peter McCullough is in studio with us, AmericaOutloud.com. You can find his show there. And I had them on to go, and I said, I'm going to carry their book that you helped write, that you're in. So I'm calling them today and make sure we order thousands of these. But it's already the number one medical bestseller on Amazon. We should push it to number one, just like Dr. Joseph Mercola's book did. That's excellent as well, COVID-19 and the Great Reset. This is COVID-19 and the global predators. We are the prey, and we do sell COVID-19 and the global reset at InfoWarsStore.com, but we're going to be carrying this book, but I don't care. Get it from Amazon. Get it from wherever. Just get it and get it out to people. And we're going to, again, plug that. Again, I know you didn't come here to plug, but you did write something to me here. You said, Alex, only the truth is censored. And that's absolutely right. It's why they had CNN driving around the parking lot today. It's why they've got local white supremacist groups out after me that work for the feds, obviously. Well, they tried to set us up for January 6th. Is because we're over the target. And that's where we are today. And freedom is not free, folks. It's under attack. And I mean, just in general, because we're going to go to break here in a moment, come up with a longer segment, Doctor. Just the tyranny, the power grab they're using as a citizen, how do you think other citizens should stand up against this? Because I don't want violence. I think they're trying to push us into civil war, coming after our children with these poisonous shots.
We have to break the fear. I think the most important meme I've ever seen so far on COVID-19 is a woman who's holding her head in anguish, and she says, my vaccine doesn't work unless you take yours.
Absolutely.
So you can't underestimate how important the grip of fear is driving all the levers of the COVID-19 pandemic. Every single step of the way is one step of things getting worse. The way out of this pandemic is breaking our grip of fear.
And, I mean, I can see that just as a regular person. Explain that, Doc. Each phase, the virus is released. Then there's a vaccine makes you sicker. Now they tell you more deadly bioweapons are coming. Give up all your rights. We need a global UN system, Gates said, to surveil everyone in live time to make sure new viruses don't get us. I mean, really, it's just a global technocracy takeover, world ID, using the fear of viruses that they released as the pretext for control.
Listen, I'm seeing patients every day in my practice. I can tell you, last year it was fear of the respiratory illness. This year is fear of the vaccines. It's fear of what's going to happen after taking a vaccine. Now, granted, 180 million people took the vaccine. Nothing happened. They're fine. We wish them well. But a large number of people have been injured. Over 800,000 people reported injured to the VA ERS system. People are terrified of taking the vaccines. The rates of vaccination in the United States plummeted in mid-April when the word got out that they could die after vaccination. And now people are fearful of losing their job and losing their economies.
And again, no long-term studies. Just as the British Medical Journal came out to the U.S. Senate, testified 3 days ago. They said they claim the data say it's safe. The way they did it, there's no real data on the actual rollout of it. Explain that, how that works.
Well, I can tell you, I think we heard one of the most irresponsible and reckless statements in all of medical history when Dr. Rubin, editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, I'm an editor myself, so I'm going to call him out on this. When he said, as part of the advisory committee, the only way we'll know if the products are safe is just to go ahead and use them in our small children.
Guys, you're always, and gals back there, please pull up, I don't want to misgender, please pull up that clip of the FDA board member a few weeks ago saying, we're never going to learn what this does until we give it to kids. That is crazy town.
Historians will write, and bioethicists will write, how we are absolutely trampling all principles of protection of human subjects. All the vaccines are in research. None of them are sufficiently safe or effective enough to be fully approved. Everyone knows this. They are investigational, and we are trampling upon our cornerstones of bioethics.
Marie Antoinette, it turns out, did not say when everybody was starving and they said, open up the granary, feed them, or they're going to storm the Bastille. She didn't really say, let them eat cake, historically, but Dr. Rubin really did say, we're not going to find out if this hurts the kids unless we give it to them. Wow. That's the FDA today, because they had a bunch of other people resign. So they finally found board members that would do their bidding. We'll come back in 60 seconds with that clip. Tell everybody, you know, tune in now. This is historic stuff. Looking at the science, any research, is there a way to detox from the Pfizer or Moderna shots or from COVID-19 now that we know the spike protein stays in the body for a long time? You might want to recap that information and then please just go into that, because I get a lot of questions from listeners about that.
Let's tackle the respiratory infection and what's called long COVID or long hauler syndrome. What we're talking about is we now understand that the spike protein on the virus can persist in the human body for over a year. This is a very important new piece of information just broken in the last few months. This means that the spike protein almost certainly is in the brain, it's in the spinal cord, the peripheral nerves, the muscles, the heart, etc. And people feel fatigue, brain fog, cognitive decline, neuro and sensory abnormalities. It's almost as if wherever the virus really has had a strong play, we see damage in the human body, and it takes time to recover. There are no prospective randomized trials specifically in long hauler of therapies, but we're applying concepts of what we learn in the treatment of the acute syndrome to the long hauler syndrome. I'd point your viewers to the Frontline Critical Care Consortium, flcc.net. They have a protocol. It's called the iRecover protocol, and it lists some ideas. Now, these are not proven in randomized trials, but it lists some ideas. The principles are to antagonize the spike protein. Our lead drug that does that is ivermectin. And then the neurologic recovery and inflammation. One drug that's coming to the fore is fluvoxamine. Fluvoxamine now, most recently in Lancet, in the acute respiratory illness, was shown to actually have a positive impact on the severity of the disease. Fluvoxamine is a serotonin, a norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor. It's a drug that seems to have a play. There's two prior positive trials. We also use prednisone, a steroid that's an anti-inflammatory. And when there's any pleural pericardial involvement in the long hauler, I use colchicine supported by the Colcorona trial. As a scientist, as someone who's been very, very true to the medical literature, I want to see scientific support for the drugs used in combination, but I don't want to put patients off like your loved ones, Alex, by saying, listen, I'm going to wait for large randomized trials and guidelines to tell me what to do, because those are over 5 years away.
And I know it's the ivermectin word, and they attacked Joe Rogan for it, and you saw the whole Sanjay Gupta thing. Maybe you can speak to your view on who won that debate. But now I've seen some of the Merck and Pfizer and others are coming out with their own antiviral pills that, according to the news I saw, have some of the similar molecular properties of ivermectin. From your research and the papers out there, what is the active mechanism in ivermectin, and what do we believe may be, you know, causally helping people? I know we're not supposed to talk about that, but I know my dad immediately got better when he got on it. I immediately got better when I got on it. It was like 5-6 hours later, I felt 60-70% better. It was incredible. I was also taking budesonide, so I couldn't tell which one of them it was or if it was both. But what's happening with the ivermectin as best we can tell?
The principles are we always use drugs in combination. I want everyone to understand that there's no single drug that's both necessary and sufficient to treat COVID-19. We use drugs to impair viral replication, treat the inflammation, treat thrombosis.
Then the blood of aspirin, it's a cocktail.
It takes 4 to 6 drugs because it's a complicated fatal infection. HIV takes 4 to 6 drugs. So, of course, COVID is going to take 4 to 6 drugs. Ivermectin plays a special role. All the data, we have over 60 studies overall, over 30 randomized trials. Joe Rogan did school Sanjay Gupta. Sanjay Gupta is a graduate of University of Michigan. I went there in graduate school. Listen, he's a smart guy. But the bottom line is our media doctors and our public health officials are not contemporary with the data. We have over 30 randomized trials of ivermectin. It basically shows about a 70% reduction in mortality. It seems to work early in the pre-hospital phase. Clearly works in the hospital phase. You know, families are basically taking hospitals to court in order to get their loved ones ivermectin. It has at least 3 mechanisms of action. One, it impairs the entry of the virus into the human nucleus of the cell. It has an anti-spike protein property to it, which is incredibly useful. That's the reason why your symptoms started to improve. And then lastly, it inhibits some kinases, some enzymes that participate in inflammation. It has 3 different mechanisms of action. No wonder ivermectin is so important. Now, the new Merck drug, molnupiravir, has a single mechanism of action. It actually works against the polymerase. That is a slow target. It's the same target as remdesivir. I would not put a lot of stock into the Merck drug mechanistically because it's going to play a role, minor role. The Japanese already have a drug similar to that called favipiravir. The Russians and some states in India use it. It's not that impressive.
So, obviously, they're smart guys over at Pfizer. I mean, hell, their former chief scientist went public warning of exactly this happening before anybody was injected a year and a half ago, Dr. Yudon. So they knew this, obviously. And so why the hell would they try to suppress something like ivermectin? It's got to be more than just about money. I mean, to me, if you know that's helping people and you try to keep a treatment away from folks, that sounds like Joseph Mengele territory to me.
You know, I said on Tucker Carlson, that's probably the first interview where I came out and really gave this analysis. It looks from the very beginning that there was intentional suppression of early treatment of COVID-19. Of course, the virus is treatable with drugs. Of course, there are druggable targets, and that's what Pfizer and Merck are coming around to now. But it was always treatable early. I told on national TV, Tucker Carlson, I told Tucker I thought there was intentional suppression of early treatment in order to promote suffering, fear, loneliness, isolation, hospitalization, and death. And in that condition became the preparation for accepting a mass vaccination program.
And then a world medical ID tied to the carbon tax ID. That's something officially announced by the Davos Group.
You know, I can't confirm that, but I can tell you right now, there is lockstep in the world. Every single government is in lockstep with one another on mass vaccination as really the only solution to the pandemic. We've never seen anything like this before, and we have breaking data now that the vaccines are not stopping COVID-19.
Well, right here in this building working now, because he just retired out of the military, is somebody that ran operations at the Pentagon. I mean, you know, high-level operations, run major operations. And he couldn't get into classified stuff, but he said, no, this is all a big operation. And they're using military technology to roll out the fear. He told me this, you know, back on January 6th, we were there. Look at this. Cloak and dagger, military intelligence outfit at center of U.S. digital vaccine passport push. Same thing. They're using Army intelligence, not just the general ones, the highest level PSYOP officers, psychologists, psychiatrists, behavioral psychologists, to come out with this. Here's an example out of all the newspapers in the UK. Here's a newspaper stand all on the same day saying, here's your vaccine passport. You must use it. That's military government control. So this is being done. It came out in Canada. Their PSYOPs are running it. In Europe, NATO PSYOPs are running it. This is the high-level PSYOPs, not our military, but the PSYOPs of that, literally using war programs of deception and lies and fear to, quote, terrorize us and brainwash us, was the quotes out of Canada and the UK. Terrorize and brainwash the public. And then you see the results here, total unification of the newspapers with the same message.
The media has been propagandized. This is very important. Propaganda is false information put forward by those in position of authority. We've seen it time and time again. I remember in June, I was called on national TV. There was a government-issued talking point of hospitalizations for COVID, and the talking point was that is a crisis of the unvaccinated, and it was a montage, Alex, of everyone parroting crisis of the unvaccinated, and we knew it wasn't farther from the truth. We had data through June from Havers and colleagues, published by the CDC COVIDNet Network and then Fillmore from the VA, that at that time, 23% of Americans in the hospital with COVID-19 were vaccinated. Fast forward now to August, first week in August, we have CMS data showing 60% of those over age 65 in the hospital with COVID-19 are fully vaccinated. And we have now the CDC on their website is telling America, CDC has 41,000 plus full-blown vaccine failures. I'm talking about fully vaccinated.
Doc, stay there. You wanted this last segment to get into the vaccine isn't working. We're going to come back. You'll have the floor. And this is just amazing. All right. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. The book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. McCullough is in studio with us for two more segments. Then he's got to get in his car and get to the airport. Wow. Amazing. Powerful information here. Two segments left. You've got a lot you want to cover. You've got the floor, sir.
It's very important that we've learned in the last few months that with the Delta pandemic, the Delta outbreak now, the virus has completely mutated now. 100% of the infections that we're seeing are the Delta variant. The Delta has learned to thrive in the nose and mouth of those who are fully vaccinated. Our CDC director came out in midsummer after there was an outbreak on in a wedding in Houston, an airplane flight from Texas to Washington and to a naval cruise boat from the UK. It was clear that the Delta virus can thrive in the nose and mouth of the vaccinated. Now, two important papers one from the Wisconsin Department of Public Health, first author is Reimerisma, clearly showed among those vaccinated and unvaccinated, the viral loads, Alex, were heavy. Heavy meaning low cycle thresholds, high viral concentrations in the nose and mouth of those vaccinated, unvaccinated. It was actually equal between those two groups. They were the ones who came forward for testing with incipient COVID-19, and they actually extracted the secretions from those who were vaccinated and actually tested the infectivity, and they clearly were infectious. So I want everyone to understand this. Whether or not someone's taken the vaccine, they are not less infectious than someone who has not taken the vaccine.
What about the statements we hear from Fauci that you're going to get less sick if you've had the supposed vaccine, but then it wanes in 6 months? Is that even true? Because I see all these different numbers out there, some numbers out of the UK, that you're more likely to be hospitalized if you've had the shot. Other numbers say, I mean, what's real from your research?
Well, here we are. You know, in the United States, we've had 60% of the population overall take the vaccine, or one of the three vaccines. They're not the same, obviously. We've had 80% of seniors. And we wish them well. We've had our family members, our patients, and others have volunteered for the vaccine programs. They're all investigational. We wish them well. We had data published in the MMWR. First author is Self, and this is published by the CDC. That's the best data they ever have, Alex. They showed with the legacy variants earlier in the pandemic, we're talking about the wild type alpha, beta, a little bit of gamma, that, in fact, there was protection from a community estimates from hospitalization with the vaccine program. And Moderna was, as I recall, about 90%. Pfizer was at 70%. J&J about 68%. You can look up that paper and get the exact percentages. Those aren't bad. Everything changed when the Delta outbreak occurred. What happened was once we got to enough people vaccinated, the dominant mutant moved forward that could thrive among the vaccinated, and that's when the floor started to fall out of the vaccine program. Israel and the UK are ahead of us. Now we're up to over 90% of those in Israel with COVID-19 are fully vaccinated. In fact, they're fully engaged in a booster program. It's obviously not working. In the UK, the 43rd UK surveillance report, you can look it up, they have between 80 and 92% of people over age 50 fully vaccinated. And in fact, the point estimate of those dying in the UK right now, Alex, with COVID-19, 81.8% of individuals are fully vaccinated.
Wow. So when the head of the CDC 2 weeks ago said vaccine doesn't protect you basically at all, then she said yesterday 96% protection of children, that's a lie.
It's 96% of the syndrome of developing a drippy nose, which kids may or may not develop. These are, in a sense, gross overestimates of benefit. What people care about is hospitalizations and death, and what the CDC is telling us on their website, October 18th, over 41,000 Americans fully vaccinated have either died or been hospitalized. Sadly, about a quarter of that fraction is, in fact, deaths. And over 80% of the deaths are in the seniors, and about 65% of the hospitalizations in the seniors. Alex, COVID-19 has always been about the seniors. It's not about the children, and the vaccines aren't protecting them.
Why are they going after the children when they know that it's increased heart problems? I mean, why? I mean, if you wanted to be a villain, you would do something like this to give them something that doesn't protect them, that statistically is going to hurt them, and then you just gaslight everybody and say it's going to protect them when it's not.
You know, we have unprecedented times now. There are some states that have laid the groundwork to say a child down to 12 years old can make their own decision on a potentially fatal injection with one of these COVID-19 vaccines. We had the World Health
Organization. That's getting rid of parental rights.
We've had the World Health Organization come out with a statement saying that, in a sense, being enrolled in school is equivalent to actually giving informed consent for one of the vaccines. We have a situation where bioethics is off the rails. Parental rights are now taken away, and children are going to be faced with a potentially fatal decision. We've never seen this ever in human history.
And then they're telling children, you'll get superpowers when you take this. And then the sad little children are probably, if they're not lucky, just get a heart attack instead.
Everything we know about the spike protein at this point in time is bad. I told you, since this is an ongoing story month by month. I told you about the spike protein in myocarditis, neurologic injury, immunologic injury. There is a spike protein-induced disease, Alex, that occurs about 2 weeks after the vaccine. It's called vaccine-induced thrombocytopenic purpura, VITT. It has its own acronym now in medicine. There's bleeding from the gums and mouth. There's a hemolytic anemia, blood in the urine. patients go into renal failure. They develop thrombosis at the same time. It can be fatal. It's very serious. There was a young mother written up in her obituary in Oregon. You'll find her. She said in her obituary she died 2 weeks after the vaccine due to vaccine-induced thrombocytopenia, cytopenic purpura, VITP.
And then Facebook censored it. You know, that's the sick part is Big Pharma is heavily invested in Big Tech and vice versa. Total conflict of interest. I'm sure you've seen the graphs that, or the illustrations that show how the board of the FDA, the boards of the CDC, it's a revolving door with Pfizer and Big Pharma. I mean, this is incredible.
It's in the open right now. You know, the two chairmen of the FDA go, Scott Gottlieb, who's my contemporary, a little bit younger, he's actually on the board of Pfizer, and he's advising America on MSNBC about vaccines. He's on the board of Pfizer. Stephen Hahn, the one who followed him, he actually joined the investment capital firm that is behind Moderna. You have Rick Bright, the person who blocked hydroxychloroquine stores in the White House as Peter Navarro was trying to free them. Rick Bright joins the Rockefeller Foundation. The conflict of interest is in the open. The NIH co-owns the patent for the Moderna. The conflict of interest is in the open. The censorship is in the open. The Trusted News Assert Initiative announced December 10th said it will only promote the vaccine and it'll do everything to squash vaccine hesitancy, including early treatment and anything on vaccine safety.
Robert Barnes is up next. He's defending one of this primary whistleblower that's come out from Pfizer just recently. And she said some very, very insightful things. In fact, Project Veritas first broke this story, and then also Candace Owen and other people have interviewed her. But I'll put some clips up. Not only some stories, but some other Project Veritas I'll put right at the end if we have enough time of the interview that they had there with that. But here we go with Robert Barnes with what's going on right now on this whistleblower from Pfizer.
Snail mail. All right, Barnes, start over, continue how huge this is. They're really trying to suppress this, but it's coming out even mainline news. COVID-19 researcher blows the whistle on data integrity issue in Pfizer's vaccine trials. That's a dry way of saying it. Major universities, you know, have headlines like that. But this is as fake as a $3 bill. Break it down for us.
Sure. So, I mean, this story is being reported and was vetted by the British Medical Journal. So you're talking about one of the premier medical publications in the world. Researched this, reviewed this, investigated this. Talked to people that knew her, talked to other people that were aware of what was happening with these companies doing these clinical testing for the COVID-19 vaccine, and they confirmed every single disturbing aspect and attribute of this. They confirmed that what happened is, here you have a whistleblower, and the case that will be filed is for children's health defense against the FDA related to emergency use authorized for this vaccine for little children, and that's what led her to come forward. Because this is such a disturbing level of clinical failures. I mean, every measurement and mechanism for safety, for efficacy, for determining whether this vaccine works, whether this vaccine is dangerous, all of them were vitiated and violated in the critical stage 3 clinical testing. And she witnessed it firsthand. This is someone who has done over 50 clinical trial involvement over an extensive 2-decade career. And this is not someone that had any political motivation at all. This is someone who stepped in and simply was doing her job and was shocked at what she saw. The worst clinical stage environment she'd ever witnessed. Called it helter-skelter. That's what other witnesses who saw it described it as. I mean, they had severe adverse events taking place that were not even being reported or disclosed. They had basic baseline information that wasn't being kept. The specimen data wasn't being properly maintained. The vaccine wasn't even at the proper temperature. I mean, it's just an utter disaster what was taking place. You had complete chaos, a complete breakdown of all the basic elemental rules for measuring the safety and efficacy of a drug. You could have no confidence. And what they were doing when they didn't have adequate data, they were just falsifying the data. They were just fabricating the data. They were putting in false entries into the system that was going to be reported for purposes of FDA approval and authorization. So that's what's so terrifying here, is that the most critical mass-mandated drug in history went through the worst clinical testing scientifically imaginable. And the FDA knew about it a year ago. And as soon as she disclosed it to the FDA, these companies fire her and terminate her. So clearly that means they weren't serious. So it's not just what happened in the clinical studies that she saw and that she heard about from other people participating. It's what does it say about Pfizer that when they found out they had a complete disaster on their hand, their reaction was not to correct, not to remedy, not to investigate, not to clarify. No, it was to fire and falsify. It was to defraud the American people. Because, I mean, there's billions of dollars being paid for these vaccines.
And Barnes, obviously, they'd done all their secret studies in animals. They knew this was coming. You predicted that almost 2 years ago. But what do you make now in light of the FDA board member saying last week, famously, I'm going to vote for this to see what it does to the kids, admitting they're guinea pigs. But now we learn it's far worse than that. They all know about this. They all know they suppressed the real data, that 86% had adverse reactions, including myocarditis, and up to 56% of those that get myocarditis at those young ages end up dying within 3 to 10 years. I mean, this is just unbelievable premeditation.
It's terrifying. I mean, so that's why this whistleblower is joining and filing a declaration in support of the suit we are about to bring on behalf of Children's Health Defense in the Western District of Texas against this emergency use authorization for young kids. They want to experiment on five-year-olds now. They're going to treat our own five-year-old kids as guinea pigs for this experiment by some of their own admissions by their own statements.
And let's go further. Let's go further. Total violation of the Nuremberg Code on its face. They have the FDA and the CDC head. The CDC head was on TV last night saying this is 96% effective and no side effects, no problems. We did studies. A complete 180 lie from reality.
Completely, because the studies aren't worth the paper they're printed on. The studies are a joke. The studies are a disgrace. That's what this whistleblower confirms from right inside the critical level clinical stage testing. There's no reliable data. They falsified data. They fabricated data. They just perjured themselves left and right to cover up the fact there is no basis to determine that there is any safety or any efficacy in any of these vaccines, least of all for minor children. And not only that, I mean, the FDA ignored data, which was a violation of their ethical and legal standards. They ignored the various contrarian information presented by a wide range of even governmental authorities, including the UK as it relates to children. They ignored and they didn't even articulate what their standard was. They failed to articulate what is the standard for measuring the safety or efficacy of this vaccine. What is the standard for measuring the safety or efficacy as it relates to the virus and how dangerous the virus may be to this population group, which is to say it is less dangerous. This virus, COVID-19, including the variants, are less dangerous to children than the flu is. So why are we sticking an experimental drug in them when we have utterly unreliable data and data that has been proven now by the whistleblowers to not be scientifically valid data, scientifically trustworthy data?
Robert, all these top scientists, again, almost 2 years ago, warned this would happen. Now what they warned of happened was premeditated. Why would Big Pharma do something this psychotic and crazy and commit a crime this massive, and now we're going to have a bunch of dead and dying children, and they think they're going to be able to suppress it and normalize it? I mean, they've lost their minds.
It's all about immunity. It's the reason why there's no available approved vaccine. The only vaccine that's out there is these emergency use authorized ones because that has complete immunity. Once they get it on the kids list, then they have the same immunity as all the other drugs on the kids list. So they want complete immunity. And why do they want immunity? Because they know this drug isn't safe and effective in the way they're telling people it is. That's why.
And they want to get rid of the population. We'll be right back with Robert Barnes talking about where we go from here and a bunch of other news that ties into this. I got another prestigious study about what the spike protein does to your DNA. Robert Barnes is our guest, and he is representing a major FDA whistleblower from inside the medical system that witnessed the greatest fraud ever in a major vaccine rollout as they tried to suppress the data that Gates admitted that 80-plus percent get sick, including myocarditis and heart attacks. So Barnes, continue laying out this huge information, and when is the lawsuit in the district of federal court here in Austin going to get filed?
This is extraordinary information, and she took great risk by coming forward, and the reason she did it was because she was horrified that they were going to experiment on kids now. So we're going to file suit for the Children's Health Defense in the Western District of Texas early next week, maybe sooner, as soon as the FDA fully and formally makes its announcement, it's done partial stages of it, that the emergency use authorization has been approved for the purposes of injecting five-year-olds with this experimental drug for which they have completely inadequate data on either safety or efficacy for a virus that simply does not pose meaningful risks to children in that age group, and that they have failed to articulate a standard as they're required for measuring the safety and efficacy of the drug, for measuring the risk of the virus, for measuring the risk of the vaccine. And particularly the long tail, long-term risks are, of course, overwhelmingly on children because they have the longest life expectancy. So there's great dangers to this drug over time. The FDA admits they don't even know the full scale of it. Instead, they're just going to experiment on children. And that's why she came forward, because what she witnessed was shocking. It was a helter-skelter environment where every basic measurement of safety and efficacy was completely eviscerated and ignored. This is someone who spent two decades in the clinical trial context, auditing the records to make sure they're done properly, overseeing it to make sure it's done effectively, done in a way that is scientifically conforming. That means you have what's called blinded studies, so people don't know who is getting the vaccine versus who is getting the placebo. That means everything is done in a proper manner in terms of measuring the medical record data information. That means you get certain baseline data before you inject the vaccine or the placebo, and then you're able to measure it afterwards to know what effects the vaccine has. That means the person is being monitored in live time after they receive the injection to make sure you detect any things that occur. Because, I mean, if people pass out, other things, they may not even know what's happening. It needs to be constantly, continuously monitored. In addition, of course, you have to have basic safety and efficacy in terms of privacy of medical records and making sure you dispose of things like needles appropriately. If you're not even disposing of needles appropriately, which is what was happening here, needles sticking out of bags, if you're not even properly managing the privacy of medical records with people's records, you know, stuck on the wall for the janitor to watch, to read, oh, look, you know, let's look at Susie's sexually transmitted disease right up there, that kind of thing. If you're not even at that level of safety or efficacy, if you're not even at that level of protocols and procedures, if you're not even at that level of safeguarding critical and essential information, you can guess what the medical record data looks like. They didn't even get the baseline data. They didn't even record it. They didn't even note it correctly. When they got caught doing that, what did they do? They falsified the data. They fabricated the records. That's what they did instead. They weren't even monitoring people right after they received the injection. They were left in the hallways unmonitored. They weren't even recording properly a whole bunch of adverse events that were taking place, including severe adverse events in response to the vaccine. It wasn't even blinded. Everybody knew who was getting the placebo versus the vaccine, which completely throws out the scientific utility of a clinical study, particularly a stage three. This was a stage three Pfizer clinical study to measure the efficacy of the primary vaccine being distributed for COVID-19 to the entire world. And they didn't even have basic elementary safety, security, scientific standards to measure it. And that is why it is so dangerous that it is now being imposed on young children as young as 5 years old. The FDA did not even articulate a standard for measuring safety and efficacy. They should have done an individualized stratified test. They didn't. They don't even have, they ignored a bunch of relevant data. They hid a bunch of other pertinent data. This is a constitutional abomination. This is a public health disaster. And that is why this whistleblower is going to be filing a declaration in support of a suit by Children's Health Defense against FDA to stop these illegal, illicit activity of
incredible. This is the biggest disaster in human history. Stay with us.
Ending up the program, Jesse Waters has some important things to say, and he lays it on the line. And here we go with Jesse Waters.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. I'm Jesse Waters in for Tucker. The left's still in a complete meltdown over Glenn Youngkin's win in Virginia. They're accusing anybody who voted for him of being a tiki torch carrying white supremacist. More on that in a minute. But first, Donald Trump officially became the Republican nominee for president in mid-July of 2016. Just days later, a Russian national living in this country made a claim that would upend Donald Trump's candidacy and eventually his presidency. It's a claim that changed the course of U.S. politics for the next 4 years. The Russian national, a man named Igor Danchenko, said he had just received a phone call proving that Donald Trump's campaign was conspiring with the Russian government. The phone call supposedly came from a U.S. citizen who was serving as president of the Russian-American Chamber of Commerce. That alleged phone call became the central piece of evidence in the Steele dossier, written by British ex-spy Christopher Steele. That dossier, in turn, was a key piece of evidence in the FBI's warrant applications to spy on the Trump campaign. The government leaked information on those supposedly secret warrant applications to the media, and the Russian collusion narrative began. In January, BuzzFeed published the Steele dossier online. BuzzFeed's editor justified publishing the document by saying the FBI was supposedly taking it seriously.
This document that is being fought over, that, and that, by the way, everybody except the public in a certain sense has seen, we've seen, you know, and we don't have any special powers. At what point does the audience say, you know, we can see this too, and we can deal with the fact that it is clearly labeled as unverified, that it's clearly labeled that some things in it aren't true, which is what we did.
I kind of get it. I mean, so what you're saying is because famous people are gossiping about it, and because other
famous
news organizations,
people, the president of the United States, the president-elect, and the intelligence agencies.
A famous person? They gossip, too. And by the way, let me just note.
Not gossip. The official briefing, a document that, by the way, is a public document subject to the Freedom of Information law.
Well, actually, in some sense, it's gossip because it's unverified. And the difference between what you did and what Drudge did was what Drudge reported turned out to be true, whereas it looks like what you reported is not true.
There were obvious red flags with the dossier from the very beginning. For one thing, Christopher Steele was working for an opposition research firm called Fusion GPS, which was funded by the Hillary Clinton campaign. And the dossier made several obviously false claims. For example, it stated that the Trump campaign was working with hackers in the Russian consulate in Miami. But there is no Russian consulate in Miami. But for partisan reasons, media personalities overlooked all that. They insisted the dossier was reliable.
The allegations in this Christopher Steele dossier, and you went through the timeline very well a few moments ago, are stunning.
There are actually substantial portions of what was in the Steele dossier, which was a raw intelligence document, that have indeed checked out.
Based on our own reporting and word from numerous official sources, the dossier, in fact, is far from bogus.
I think we're going to actually have to stop calling it the infamous dossier.
Mm-hmm.
Increasingly, it's the accurate dossier.
Today, thanks to an indictment from U.S. Attorney John Durham, we learn the truth. It turns out that there was no late July 26 phone call to Igor Danchenko about Russian collusion. Igor Danchenko wasn't speaking to the head of the Russian-American Chamber of Commerce about Donald Trump or about anything at all. Instead, according to today's indictment, the source of much of Danchenko's information was a Democratic Party operative and a former Hillary Clinton advisor. We can identify that Clinton advisor tonight. His name is Charles Dolan. In other words, Hillary Clinton's team wasn't just funding the Steele dossier, they were effectively writing it, too. Dolan, by the way, has extensive connections to Russia, closer connections than anybody on Donald Trump's team had from 2006 to 2014, for example. Dolan did PR work on behalf of the Russian government and a Russian energy company. According to Durham's indictment in August 2016, Danchenko told Dolan that he was working on, quote, a project against Trump, unquote. Dolan responded by saying he had just received dirt on Paul Manafort, who was Donald Trump's campaign manager at the time, from a, quote, GOP friend. It was all a lie. According to today's indictment, quote, Dolan later acknowledged to the FBI that he never met with a GOP friend in relation to this information that he passed to Danchenko, but rather fabricated the fact of the meeting and his communications with Danchenko. Throughout 2016, Dolan and other political operatives continued to feed Danchenko more lies about the Trump campaign. The indictment states, for example, that one of Danchenko's sources believed the ex-Clinton aide would, quote, take me to the State Department if Hillary wins. Danchenko himself also lied about traveling to the Moscow Hotel in the summer of 2016, a trip where he supposedly gathered information about the infamous P-tape. Danchenko lied about all of this to the FBI. He never told them he was working for a former Hillary Clinton aide. So the big question is, how did Danchenko's lies and all of his bogus conversations with these sources get into the Steele dossier? Who connected Danchenko to Christopher Steele? Well, the indictment says that a member of the National Security Council named Fiona Hill first introduced Danchenko to Steele. If that name sounds familiar, it's because Fiona Hill was one of the Democratic Party's witnesses against Donald Trump in his first impeachment trial. Now she's popped up again as one of the key figures behind the Steele dossier. That's either an incredible coincidence or a sign that our national security establishment's even more corrupt than we thought it was. But it gets worse. The FBI, it turns out, knew for years that Danchenko's sourcing was garbage. They included his claims in search warrant applications against the Trump campaign. Regardless, declassified footnotes from a DOJ Inspector General report revealed that the FBI suspected Chris Steele's dossier was a part of an elaborate Russian disinformation campaign. One of the footnotes said the Bureau, quote, did not have high confidence in this subset of Steele's reporting and assessed that the reference subset was part of a Russian disinformation campaign to denigrate U.S. foreign relations. That subset referred to the activities of former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, who Steele's dossier claimed had traveled to Prague to meet with Russian agents. Special Counsel Robert Mueller couldn't find anything to support that claim, and Cohen denied it. It was totally made up. Durham's indictment today makes it even more clear that the FBI knew the dossier was a scam. According to today's indictment, June 2017, FBI agents interviewed Danchenko in Virginia. Agents asked Danchenko about his contacts with the Clinton aide, Charles Dolan. Danchenko lied and said he didn't talk to Dolan. The FBI agent documented at the time he knew it was a lie, but nothing happened. The FBI didn't prosecute Danchenko. Robert Mueller didn't even mention any of this in his report. Until today, until John Durham's indictment, no one in the government did a thing. Now Danchenko faces 5 federal charges, including lying to the FBI to hide his conversations with Dolan. And this could just be the beginning. We're learning a lot about the collusion hoax very quickly. Weeks ago, John Durham indicted a DNC lawyer named Michael Sussman for lying to the FBI about a secret channel of communications between the Trump Organization and a Russian bank. Durham has also secured a guilty plea from an ex-FBI attorney who lied about the Trump campaign's ties to Russia. Now we're learning that Hillary Clinton allies gave information to a Hillary Clinton contractor and laundered it, all of it, into the FBI and the Department of Justice. More than 4 years after that fabricated July 26 phone call, some of these criminals are finally going to jail.
There seems to be a scandal going on in some of your intelligence agencies. An article just out says this, okay, an AP article. Thousands of intelligence officers could soon face dismissal for failing to comply with the U.S. government's vaccine mandate, leading some Republican lawmakers to raise concerns about removing employees from agencies critical to national security. So are they, do they know something that maybe the public in general, the general public doesn't know? These are people with deep information. Branches and sources and so forth. So are they into something that other people, you know what I mean? Said several intelligence agencies had at least 20% of their workforce unvaccinated as late as October. And the CIA director Burns is saying 97% of their people are. And the National Reconnaissance Office says 90% of theirs are. But Stewart went on, this representative, Chris Stewart, went on and said some agencies in the 18-member intelligence community have as much as 40%, okay, of their workforce that are not vaccinated. So that's, is that a red flag? I think it is. I think they know that the vaccination could be a problem. So anyway, I want to thank each and every one of you for listening on this Saturday night. And, John Stottmiller passed away, and so we want to thank him for the work that he did for Republic Broadcast Network over the years. But thank you very much, Johnny, and good night. Bye-bye.